Welcome back. It's the Razzball Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am D-Don, joined by the Fantasy Master Lothario himself, Razzball's own Gray Albright. How you doing over there, Gray?
Hey, what's going on, B-Don? So on today's show, second baseman, this is going to be awful. This is not a good position. I'm sorry. I don't like spoilers, but I'm going to have to spoil it for some people listening at home. Not a good position.
Well, you know, there is just like there's the thing that like every position is terrible. So now it's looks like it's the average. Like this is just the average position because it's awful, Gray.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. It's like the outfielders are like the world's tallest midgets, and then you have just varying shades of little people underneath them.
If shortstop may be okay if certain people show up, but if they don't and they aren't who we thought they were, then it becomes terrible like the rest of them.
yeah, it's not good. You know what? It's like when you turn the baseball into a bowling ball, it's just like things are going to happen that, you know, unfortunately hitting is a little bit down and second baseman are really hurting. I don't know. Like if you look at second baseman, and this is about second baseman, so we're not just this isn't just idle chit chat before we do a 4-hour podcast. This is serious business, and no one should be fast forwarding. But if you look at second baseman, and then you look at someone like Jeff Kent, who just fell off of the Hall of Fame ballot, and you're like, if he were playing now. He'd be a surefire Hall of Famer, right? Like, but because he played during when people weren't sure if everyone was on steroids or if it was because of like he was in the lineup of Bonds or if he just wasn't a good teammate or he was a bad glovesman. I don't know. Whatever the reason is, honestly, I would have voted for Jeff Kent. But anyway, second basemen are really bad, man. They're bad. Yeah. Position is not good. So let's get to it.
Yeah, let's go ahead and just jump into it. Number one was Mookie Betts, who we went over in the top 10, and he only qualifies there in Yahoo kind of based eligibility leagues. We've already talked about him. Moving on to number two, that is Marcus Semien. Last year, he went 26 home runs, 25 stolen bases, 101, 83, 248. You have him projected this year for 31, 22, 104, 79, 246. So a few more home runs, a few less steals, but pretty much in line with what we saw last year, Gray.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting right to the negativity, right off the bat. Literally, I'm going to have to get negative on this because
the number one second baseman. Yeah,
the number one second baseman in most leagues, just about all leagues except for Yahoo. But even like in Yahoo, Anthony DeRusso still has second base eligibility. So you know who knows with Yahoo. But yeah, so the number one second baseman, Marcus Semien, who I do like, so take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but yeah, his first 2 months weren't good, right? I mean, he was really bad. He was basically like, if you had him last year, you were potentially dropping him in shallower leagues, and in deeper leagues, you were like, I wonder what's going on with donkey teeth in fantasy football, because it was really bad. I mean, it was like uncomfortably bad his first 2 months. So here's a little something that some people might know about, other people may not. So it turned out that the Rangers started using a bouncy ball to commemorate their 50th year in the league, and that didn't start until May. So Marcus Semien, I mean, I don't know if it was because of the bouncy ball. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, it's like so hard to get like direct answers from MLB. It's like no one wants the cop to having a different ball, even though it's so obvious that they had a different ball. I mean, Albert Pujols and Aaron Judge hit the most homers. Like, I mean, Aaron Judge, maybe like that maybe covers for MLB a little bit, because if you look at Aaron Judge, you're like, oh yeah, he could totally lead the league for the final 2 months of the season. But then you look at Albert Pujols and he was like, I mean, he was 100 years old, and he had like 7 homers the year before for the whole season. And he starts using a bouncy ball, and suddenly he's leading the league, you know, because, you know, not to go too far down this road, because if you don't know by now, I don't know how much I can really fill you in. But basically, balls that MLB wanted to track, if it went into the stands, those balls were different than other balls. So any balls to commemorate things. So the Texas Rangers 50th anniversary ball, Aaron Judge chasing Maris's balls. Those were Aaron Judge chasing Maris's balls. Take that out of context. Aaron Judge chasing Maris's record. Those balls were different because MLB wanted to track them when they went into the stands, and Pujols' balls were different. So you saw what it did for Judge and Pujols. I mean, so I don't know, man, with the Rangers. Like, the entire Rangers team from the hitting side of things really has me worried about this. Like, I'm thoroughly concerned. Marcus Semien at home across the entire season only hit 10 homers, and he hit 210 and 16 homers and 285 on the road. And in April, he hit 0 home runs in April and 157. And in May, he hit 1 homer and 233. So, I mean, he was really bad. He then became, like, you know, why he's the number one second baseman is because he became the best. He became a top 10 hitter in the entire major leagues from like June through October. So he became really good, but he was really bad to start the year. And then the Rangers started using this ball, and Semien suddenly turned on. Like, it's really fishy, man. And unfortunately, I would draft Semien, but I'm super hesitant. I'll be honest. And this is the first second baseman off the board, so it's not a great position.
Yeah, I mean, he's in second base is the last position off the board right now. Like, that's how bad the position is and how many question marks there are around it. It's crazy. And Semien doesn't help the case because in his last like 4 full seasons, he's had as low as 10 stolen bases, as high as 25, and home runs, he's hit as low as 15 and as high as 45. So Semien himself is like the case for which ball are they using this season. Like if it's a bouncy ball, he can hit like 40 home runs. If it's a kind of bouncy ball, he's a 30 home run hitter. If they throw a dead ball out there, it might be over. Like if it just doesn't pick up like he did last year, if they don't swap in some, you know, bouncy balls in Texas or whatever was going on there. So there's definitely concern there with Semien, despite him, you know, kind of being the consensus number one second baseman, either him or the guy you have at number two, or I guess technically number three in your rankings page, and Jose Altuve.
Yeah, no, exactly. Go ahead. You want to go into Altuve?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and move to Altuve. He had 28 home runs, 18 stolen bases, 103, 57, 300 last year. You have him projected for 27 home runs, 14 stolen bases, 106, 72, 289. And Jose Altuve is another one that just I might go with Semien. He still has shown, like, he put up his career high stolen base at 31, which isn't a great sign, but at least it shows that he's still willing to steal. Like, Jose Altuve's lost that upside, and I'm worried he's going to bottom out here, Grant.
Yeah, no, completely. Like, Jose Altuve, you know, for again, this is the first tier, so you would hope for more positive affirmations for me when we came to discussing these players. But so Jose Altuve, for people who don't know, like, you know, he's aging, and his like 315 foot home runs can easily turn into 280 foot outs. You know, for another, like, for other examples, like, look at a guy like Miguel Cabrera. He was like one of the best hitters in the entire major leagues for the longest time. And then suddenly his bat slows and he's just like a 240 hitter with 12 home runs. Like, that's, I mean, unfortunately, you know, like, I don't want to be like Mr. Doomsday here, but it's not good. Like, at a certain point, players are going to age. And Jose Altuve's numbers, like, you look at them and they're like, you're basically hoping that he can just hold everything together for one more year. That's not really what you want from a guy you're drafting at the point where you're taking Altuve. Like, you know, you're not looking at a guy usually in the, you know, what is it, like the third round he's going? It's like, you don't want to look at a guy in the third round and be like, huh, well, fingers crossed he can just, like, keep it together for one more year. That's not good, you know? Like, that isn't what you want. So, yeah, I mean, last year he stole, you know, he upped his steals again, like you said. I mean, he stole a few more bases. So maybe, you know, because, like, what I was going to say with Semien, too, with Semien and Altuve, like, if, you know, worst case scenario, hopefully, fingers crossed, the floor is like 2015 265 and 2015 20 homers, 15 steals, 265. I mean, that's not awful. I mean, it's obviously it's not what you're paying for, but if as long as they can get like some steals, you would assume the homers won't bottom out completely. So if the homers don't bottom out completely and you know they both get like you know some steals, you would hope at worst like they're going to be somewhat valuable. Like that would probably put them in the range of, I want to say like maybe top 60 overall. So lower than they're going, you know, Altuve is the first guy off the board at NFBC. He's going at 34 overall. So, you know, if you lost in fantasy value, if like you take him 34 overall, and he ends up at like 60, 70 overall on the player rater at the end of the year, it's still not terrible. I mean, it's, you know, it could be worse, you know, like it could, like he could be completely bottom out and, you know, give you no value. But as long as it's like some value, and I think for Semien and Altuve, I think their floors are probably high enough where it's not as risky maybe as we're making it sound, but there's definitely some risk here. Like Altuve has managed to fend off Father Time for a long, long time. But I mean, in reality, it's going to catch up at some time. I mean, it's without fail, it catches up with everyone. So it's going to catch up with him too. Hopefully it's not this year.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Semien's not a high average player to begin with isn't in his favor. And as you mentioned, kind of the Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera line was like age 33, age 34. They never really got either power. They never really got the power and average together. Pujols specifically had a power season, but like it wasn't the same ever again. Like Altuve's in that same line and he's 5'6", like 160. So there's a little bit of a reason. The coffer boxes are probably the only thing keeping me from being completely out on Altuve, but at his draft cost, at current draft cost, I'm probably out because he's getting overdrafted because of how bad second base is. I mean,
actually, I said the second basemen were the world's tallest midget of positions, and Altuve, I guess, fittingly is going number one to that position. Yeah.
Moving on to number four, the next two guys are, you know, they should be up here, but they missed a lot of time last year. Number four is Ozzie Albies. Last season in 64 games, he had 8 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 36, 35, and 247. You have him projected for 27, 14, 82, 87, 254. He had the foot fracture that cost him a lot of 2022. And Rudy's projections are pretty down on the power. He's down to 20 home runs. He's never failed to hit 24 in a full season of games. What are you thinking about here, Gray? Where are you at in Rudy's compare? What do you think about the power drop from Rudy?
Well, I think with Ozzy Albies, there's two scenarios here. So it can either be you throw out last year completely, and, you know, as many people threw out, like, the 2020 season, his last year could basically be, I mean, he had 64 games. It could basically be like, you know, just throw it out. It's not even worth looking at. So that's one scenario where it's like Ozzy Albies was not good last year, but it doesn't matter because he was injured, and then he came back from injury, and then he was playing with an injury, and at no point was he really, you know, at no point did he really find his groove. Now, the second scenario, and the scenario that I'm trying to, you know, be optimistic, and I'm you know, aiming that this is the right scenario, that's the scenario where you just throw out the last season and it has nothing to do with anything. It's just like, and that's it. There's no correlation. So it's either last year, what there was correlation from last year, or there's no correlation. I'm hoping that there's no correlation. I'm hoping that last year was just a blip on the radar. It was just an off year. And you just got to look past it and hope he goes back and he just continues on from how good he was in 2021. Like, that's basically what you're making that bet. And the other bet of expecting him to somehow, you know, be as good as he was, you know, if somehow last year is a indication of this year, then he's going to be awful too. It's not going to be good. And I can understand then why Rudy's projections are saying what they're saying. Like, I'm guessing, you know, and there's no reason, like, if I don't actually have Rudy's rankings in front of me, but I'm assuming he's way lower on Ozzy Albies. Like, if Ozzy Albies is, you know, going at, you know, if he's hitting, say, sixth in the Braves lineup, and last year is, you know, related to this year for him, and is a, you know, and is a, the way he is now, his career is going, then there's going to be, I mean, Ozzy Albies shouldn't be drafted in the top 100 overall. Probably, I would guess, according to Rudy's rankings, I'm saying I'm willing to overlook last year. So,
yeah, I'm with
you. Again, it's like it's a mess. it's not good, but yeah,
I am with you. I will say I'm probably expecting more like 2019 numbers than 2021 numbers. You know, if he gives me 25-15, which is pretty much what you have projected for him, that's perfectly fine with what I'm expecting from him. And I think the only issue with Albies, and you kind of mentioned it there without bringing it up and kind of pointing at it, is the spot in the batting order right now is five or six. It's probably two versus lefties. He's probably going to stay there. He's always crushed lefties, but he's always struggled versus righties. And so versus righties, you are looking at him dropping to five or six, which cuts into the plate appearances, which cuts into the runs and RBIs. So there's that potential drop in just like overall value. But as a whole, I don't think much changes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think me and you are sort of on the same page. Yeah. Agreed.
All right. Moving on to number five, which is Jazz Chisholm Jr. Last year, he went 14-12, 39-45, 254. Of course, he had missed time as well. You have him projected for 26-19, 79-69, 251. You know, he had a number of issues last season. So it's kind of the same scenario where are you willing to write it off? Although, you know, some of his issues were back and then knee issues at the end of the season. So are you willing to really write, you know, more, in my mind at least, more serious issues, more chronic issues than what Albies was facing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly. I think there's like, it's whether or not you're betting on, you know, Jazz Chisholm to bounce back a little bit more than Ozzy Albies because his skills were a little bit better. So you're assuming that because he was, you know, he had more power, more speed, like all these things were more in Jazz Chisholm's favor. So you're guessing, or you're assuming that he's going to bounce back from this from last year better than Albies, because I see like an ADP, I see Jazz is above Albies. So I'm guessing that's what's going on there. And I have Jazz below Albies because, like you said, I don't see, like, it's not good. Like, he basically had a bad back that knocked him out for months. And then in late September, he had a torn meniscus that he needed surgery on. Now, of course, everyone's saying he's going to be fine. And if you believe in, like, anecdotal things with, like, the clubhouse, I think, from what I understand, he wasn't happy there because of, some guys that they no longer have there, I'll say. So he's going to be happier. So he'll be happier, and he's supposedly healthy. So he should be good. But, man, there's a lot of question marks on him too, man. It's like question mark galore. Like, it's like this entire position. Like, and these are the first couple guys. Like, there's so many question marks. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, Jazz Chisholm is going before Albies, like I said, and I have Albies before him, like I said. So there's a good chance I wouldn't be surprised if maybe in one league, if I have an opportunity to take Chisholm, I might, just so I have him in one league just to see what happens. But in reality, I don't know if I'm having Jazz Chisholm. I don't know if I'm gonna be drafting him this year. I mean, it's kind of, it stinks to say that, because I do think he's a lot of fun, and I can totally understand his appeal. Like, he does have 30-30 potential, but man, there is some major question marks.
There are some major question marks, and I'm with you in the Albies over Chisholm. I just feel like Albies' injuries are, you know, it was a foot fracture. He got it fixed. I feel like he's more prepared and I'm less worried about the ongoing issues with him. And I mean, as much as I like Chisholm's per game production, and he's only going to be 25, so that's definitely in his favor, but like, his career high in games is 124 at any level. So there's also that's factoring in, that it doesn't really seem like anybody is bringing up just the fact that he's never really stayed healthy for a full season yet. And, you know, that is kind of a learned talent in and of itself.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it may not matter, to be quite honest, if he gets to, like, you know, August and he's having a great year, like if he's at like 25-25 in August, and then he tails off for like the final 6 weeks, it may not matter, because, you know, in most leagues, you should be fine if you're coasting at that point. And like, anything over 25-25 is probably going to be somewhat gravy. So I think you should be okay, like, even if he tails off at the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, that's a concern too. It's all a concern, man.
yeah. That's where I'm just tumbling down the second base rabbit hole here. Moving on to the next tier, Andrés Giménez. Last year, he hit 17 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 66, 69, 297. Year projected for 16, 23, 71, 60, or 76, 277. So a slight increase in stolen bases. I mean, Andrés Giménez feels like he's safe at the position. I mean, as safe as anything else that's we've discussed so far.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, so this is a new tier, right? So this is like guys who I feel like we're at a point where they're safer. I don't necessarily think like Giménez specifically, I don't think his upside is really like crazy high. I think he's probably more or less where he's going to be, like with the projections, plus or minus three on the homers and steals, but he feels pretty safe in a lot of ways. Like, you know, last year, I don't know if a lot of people remember, but last year, I mean, he was already solid at the end of the year on the player radar. Like, this is like, he's already done his thing. Like, it's like, at this point, you're just basically accepting, like, you know, if he repeats last year, which I think he's totally capable of, I don't see why not. I mean, it feels like that's the kind of player he is. At worst, he's a little bit lower on the power, but at best, I mean, he could be much higher on the speed. So if he was at 1720 last year, 297, he could easily be like, you know, maybe he falls in homers. He goes down to like 12 to 14 homers, you know, in worst case scenario. But he could also get up to like 30 steals. And he's a really high contact guy as well. So 270 and better feels pretty doable for him. You know, feels pretty much neutral on his luck at 270. So, yeah, I like him a lot. Especially for his cost in drafts. Like, he's honestly, I'm probably going to have some shares of Jimenez because there's a good chance like he falls to me because right now he's going much later in drafts and I have him higher in my ranking. So it's just very possible because he's going at like, you know, he's going at like 80 overall in drafts. But after a guy like Tommy Edman, who I have later. So there's a chance that I end up with Jimenez. I mean, not in every league, but there could be a chance where I get him in a few leagues. Like, he's definitely on my radar. And this is like, you know, from this point till about, you know, well, we'll get to the guys in the next tier. But this tier, I could see drafting. I'm not necessarily reaching for them, but if they're there – at like, you know, like I said with Jimenez at like 80, and I have the next couple guys all in that sort of same area of around 80 overall. So if like these guys are there, I could see drafting them. I'm not in love with them. I'm not reaching for them, but I could totally see if they fall to me in the right spot, I could see grabbing a Jimenez type.
Yeah, I find myself actually really hoping he falls to me as I'm drafting. Because in the 80 range, I absolutely love him. I don't really want him earlier than that. Like, I don't feel like reaching for him too much more than that. I will take him in the 70s, but that's about as far as I'm going. But, like, I do like him. He was the 37th fastest sprint speed last year. The underlying numbers improved across the board. And, I mean, like, every single number that you want to talk about improved. Like, his ISO improved, his OPS improved, his Well, but his WRC, his WRC plus, his K rate, his walk rate, his contact rate, his swing percentage outside dropped, like his hard hit rate improved, his barrel, like every number of his improved, and he's only going to be 24. Like, I really feel like this is the kind of guy that normally gets a lot of helium and ends up in like the top 40 somehow. So if I can get him in the 80. He's not getting the helium, pushing him up to the area that I don't want to draft him. I feel like he's as safe a bet at second base as it comes. Moving on, though, number seven is Gleyber Torres. Last year, he went 24, 10, 73, 76, 257. You're projected for 25, 11, 81, 78, 261. You know, as you mentioned, this is kind of a area of second base that you could see yourself shopping in. I really didn't think I'd be in on him, but given where he's gone in some drafts, if there's not that big second base run right after you see Jimenez go, like, there's a big gap, and I kind of like where he falls sometimes, Gray.
Yeah, no, completely. I'm actually – like, he's one of those guys where I'm surprised at, like – because, like, last year – for Gleyber Torres, I wrote a sleeper post for him and I was all in on him. I drafted him a bunch of places and I was happy with the results and he produced. And then this year he's kind of going in the same area. Like, there's been no movement on his draft price, like maybe a little bit. I think last year he was at like 170 and this year he's at like 115. So he's gone up a little bit, but still 115. I have him ranked in the 80s overall. So I'm totally in on Gleyber Torres. I'm even willing to reach on him a little bit because I'm really a fan. I think he's probably, like, as of right this second, I mean, maybe not every game, but he's going to be hitting in front of Aaron Judge for a decent amount of games in Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's just like, it's a recipe for success, you know? Like, it's hard to see too much downside there. Like, I see his numbers and I see like his steals are basically, you know, they have a year over year, his steals have been like the same. So it's really like the question of whether or not his power is going to be there. And I don't see why he can't repeat, you know, at 20 plus homers again. Like in 2021, obviously the power was down, but you know, I was willing to overlook it. Like I said, I wrote a sleeper post for him last preseason. So I'm like, you know, I saw the power improving, and there was one year where he hit 38 homers in that bouncy ball year of 2019. So, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, like 25 homers, 10 steals, 260 in front of Aaron Judge for at least maybe 300 at bats. He's going to be really valuable. I'm all in on Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, I like him as well. I guess the fear is there's some youngsters that could come for some of the playing time. Maybe he doesn't play, you know, a full slate of games, but he's never really played a full slate of games. And last year he still went 24-10, 257. If he does that in front of Aaron Judge instead of him where he was last year, which was kind of sliding all over the lineup, he didn't really have a fixed spot in it. So I feel like if he's just going to be kind of locked in there at the top of the order when he is in there for that 140 games, you're still going to get plenty of production from him for where he's going, which is currently after 100.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right, moving on to number 8, Tommy Edman. Last year he went 13 home runs, 32 stolen bases, 95, 57, 265. You haven't projected for 11 home runs, 26 stolen bases, 76, 54, 260. So just a slight decrease kind of across the board for Tommy Edman here.
Yeah, you know, Tommy Edman was a bit of a struggle for me. So like I said, I like this tier, but, you know, to varying degrees. And obviously, as I said earlier, Tommy Edman's getting drafted before a guy like Gleyber, even before Andrés Giménez in some leagues. So there's a very little chance I get Edman this year. And I am, you know, I'm pretty concerned because, like, if people had him last year, I had him last year. I was all in on him, and he was fine. He wasn't bad. I mean, you read the numbers. It was all, you know, it was all good. My biggest issue was, and people who had him might remember this, there was a certain point last year where the Cardinals started batting him ninth. Now, I think his glove probably keeps him in the lineup, but the Cardinals have a ton of options. They always have a lot of options. Like, their team, like, somehow they just create players out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, who's this? Nolan Gorman? Okay, let him get 300 at-bats. Like, oh, wait, who's this? Juan Yepes? All right, yeah, here you go. Here's 100 at-bats for you. What? What do you want? Hey, look at this guy over here. Hey, Dylan Carlson wants at-bats. Okay, let's go. So there's, like, a ton of at-bats, like, that they just, like, they shuffle around their lineup so much. And Edman, like, if he's hitting ninth for even 100 to 200 at bats this year, I mean, it's going to hurt his numbers. There's, like, no way around it. Even if the lineup is good and it turns over, hitting ninth is just not a great place to be. So I like Tommy Edman a lot. Like, if his price was a little bit lower, but because it's not, I mean, I feel like I'm not going to have Tommy Edman in any leagues this year. It's just like, it's just unfortunate because I do think if you have some power, which Edman has, and speed, which he has, your floor isn't that bad. So it's hard to be too awful, but yeah, I'm just probably out on Edman this year.
Yeah, there's kind of like a second base middle infield run that happens in that area where Edman goes that he kind of gets swept up in sometimes. And it's like him, Andrés Giménez, Corbin Carroll, Dansby Swanson, like all these guys, O'Neill Cruz, like they're all kind of going at the same time. And people are like, oh, middle infield's going. I'm just going to go ahead and grab one while they're here. I feel like he gets a little bit of a boost again because of what happens at the position, but also just the stolen bases in general, which is also why I tend to prioritize them early, So I have to reach for a guy like Tommy Edd, who I don't trust, despite him, you know, doing what he did last year. And to your point, he did lose playing time as the season went on. I mean, Paul DeJong had like 40 starts in the last 2 months. So that's not exactly what you want to see from a guy that you're drafting as early as you have to take Tommy Edman. All right, so moving on to our next tier here, Gray. We have Vaughn Grissom coming in at 9. Last year in 41 games in the majors, he hit 5 home runs. He stole 5 bases, 24, 18, 291. In high A in 74 games, he hit 11 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 312. In 22 games at double A, he hit 3 home runs, 7 stolen bases, and 363. So basically, he hit everywhere he went last year, Gray. You have him projected for 16 home runs, 24 stolen bases, 67, 72, 286. I really like me some Vaughn Grissom.
Oh, man, I'm so in. I'm so in, bro. Finally, second baseman I'm interested in. Yeah, no, I mean, this is like, so this is going into a tier where I wrote a sleeper post for each of these guys in this tier, Vaughn Grissom being the first one. And I love all these guys that we're going to talk about. And by all these guys, I mean there's three guys. So Vaughn Grissom's the first. So, yeah, I'm totally in. Now, I realize I might sound like a hypocrite because I just said that I worry that Tommy Edman is going to be batting ninth, and Vaughn Grissom probably will bat some ninth. He'll be batting ninth on occasion. But you know what? For the price, I mean, the price is just so dramatically different. Edman is going at like 75 overall, and Vaughn Grissom is at like 185 overall. So we're talking about a difference of like 110. Look at Gray doing math. What? And then you have like, so with Vaughn Grissom, he's actually really interesting to me on like a psychological, maybe not psychological, but like in a big picture sort of way. It's so interesting to me that like how with fantasy guys, they do like, you know, Michael Harris II. So we'll stick with the Braves. So Michael Harris II, everyone, you know, obviously he was up in the league longer than Vaughn Grissom, but everyone loves Michael Harris II and has no problem drafting him. But then you get a guy like Vaughn Grissom who had like, he hit 5 homers and stole 5 bags and hit 291 as a 21-year-old in 41 games. I mean, I know it's a small sample size, but like that's what he's done everywhere. And like I say in my rankings, when actually in respect to like Michael Harris II, I say this, I think, in my outfielder rankings, I talk about how like if a guy hits in high A and double A, it doesn't really matter if he ever gets a triple A. Like triple A doesn't – like guys who skip triple A, better for you, man. Like good. Like you don't need triple A. And most players – and most like – great players don't need AAA. So the fact that Vaughn Grissom skipped AAA and went from AA to the majors, it just says to me, like, this guy is ready to go, man. Like, he is ready to go. Like, I guess there's some concern about whether or not, like, the Braves might platoon him, but, I mean, he's a righty. Who are they platooning them out against? Like, I don't get the concern at all. Like, if that's people's concern, if anything, I think there's a good chance that like Vaughn Grissom, like not to put, you know, the Kevorka on Ronald Acuna Jr., but we know his knee is made of wet newspaper. So if Vaughn Grissom is healthy and Acuna isn't, guess who's batting leadoff? Like, I mean, maybe Michael Harris II, but that means Vaughn Grissom's moving up to second at least. Like there's a lot of like possibilities here where Vaughn Grissom could move up in the lineup. So yes, he's probably hitting ninth for some of the season, but at his price at 185 overall, at his like, you know, with his talent level. And he's such a steal, man. Like, I am so excited about drafting Vaughn Grissom in literally every league. Like, we finally have a second baseman that there's no caveats. I am just super pumped about drafting him.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, the underlying numbers, if you're looking at, like, exit velocity and barrels and all that, really isn't overwhelming. But also, you have to remember, he only had 41 games to collect those numbers versus 140 to 160 of a lot of the other guys that he's going against. And again, he hit at every level. He's going to be entering his 22-year-old season. Like, he just has just ripped through the minors. He's going to be great. I agree, Gray. But like you said, like, the lineup is the question mark here.
Right. Yeah, no, completely. But I get that, but I don't get a 110 point, 110 drafting swing from, like, an Edmund to a Vaughn Grisham. Like, I mean, I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but I mean, if Vaughn Grisham is in the lineup for 140 games, his power is going to look better than Edmund, probably. His steals could look as good as Edmund, and his batting average might look better. So I get, like, the whole, like, you know, maybe hits ninth, which, you know, isn't ideal, but I'm really excited about Vaughn Grisham.
Yeah, I mean, if we're just talking about Tommy Edmund specifically, there's a non-zero chance that he ends up hitting 7, 8, 9 in the Cardinals lineup as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, moving on to number 10. That is Tyro Estrada. Last year, he had 14 home runs, 21 stolen bases, 71, 62, 260 in his first kind of full season in the, like, given his full season chance, finally. You have him projected for 16, 23, 87, 63, 262. And we are recording this on February 8th. And it just happened to be, like, Tyro Estrada Day on Twitter. Like, everybody had their Tyro Estrada comment. Let's hear your Tyro Estrada comment, Gray.
Well, I actually, so again, so as I said, I wrote a sleeper post for all these guys in this tier. So Estrada is another guy, second guy now. Second out of three sleeper posts, Estrada was a guy who I looked at and I was like, okay, so on the player rater, like, this is a huge, you know, not to give away all the secrets, this is a huge sort of, like, flashing light when I see a guy who shows up on the player rater from last year higher than he's being drafted this year. And that was, I mean, Estrada, like, even if Estrada just repeats last year, just repeats it, he's going to be more valuable than his current 180 overall draft pick. Like, it's going to be without a question. Like, he's easily going to be more valuable than that. I believe last year he was as valuable as the 135th pick. So better. Yes. So that's a, you know, so that's already, like, so that he has that in his favor, that all he has to do is repeat. Now, he can easily, I think, like, so he's going to hit leadoff. The Giants lineup isn't good. He's going to hit leadoff, though. So he's going to hit leadoff for as many games as they, that, you know, they can throw him out there for. So if he's healthy for 150-plus games, he's going to hit leadoff for 150-plus games. He's got 20 steal speed, as he did last year. And I think the power could potentially get better. Now, I don't know if he's, like, you know, like, he definitely didn't have the power in the minors. He didn't show power, at least in the minors, but he had a swing adjustment. He's hitting the ball harder. He's got a he hit 14 homers last year with the dead ball that everyone had. And he's also got great contact. He only had a 16% strikeout rate. I think 280, well, I think 15 homers, 25 steals, and 280 is probably the ceiling, but those are really good numbers. Those are, like, I mean, you're basically talking about a top 50 to 60 overall guy. So there's nothing but, you know, bonus value here. So I would definitely be drafting him. Actually, I've already, in the one, my one draft champions league so far, I've already drafted Estrada. And yeah, I would do it again. Like, he's honestly, too, I like the second base shortstop eligibility. So yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think at draft cost, I have no issue with him. people are talking about him like he's going in like inside the top 100. He's going outside the top 150, usually outside the top 170. So if you can get him at that price, I mean, I think the bottom numbers that you're looking at giving a full, you know, slate of games is probably like 10, and that's like if the bottom just falls out and he's nothing that we thought he was. And I think realistically, it's probably 15-15 with upside. He's not like overly fast, but it's not, you know, steals are more as much opportunity as they are, you know, speed to some extent. So sitting at the top of the lineup, at the top of the bad lineup, that should provide those opportunities for him.
Yeah, no, completely. And, you know, I think there's also, like, it's, I know he didn't come with this, like, you know, he didn't come up, like, I don't think anyone expected him to be a big prospect, you know, coming up. But, I don't know, a lot of people don't come up with a big prospect, you know, with huge prospect aspirations of, like, you know, greatness, but do really well. I don't know what people are seeing that I'm not seeing, because honestly, like I said, all he has to do is repeat last year. Like, that's it. Like, he doesn't have to grow on it. If he repeats last year, he is value.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to number 11 is CJ Abrams. Last season in 90 games, he hit 2 home runs, 7 stolen bases, 33, 21, 246. He had a number of games in AAA, and he basically went 7 home runs, 11 stolen bases, and he hit, you know, over 300 across his AAA season. He had projected for 6 home runs, 31 stolen bases, 77, 61, and 274. I'm still pretty excited about CJ Abrams, who was, you know, a top prospect for a few years here, waiting for him to come up, and I'm not ready to give up just yet.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, CJ Abrams is a good example of, like, something that I see all the time. It's like, you know, maybe I just am too dialed in. maybe I'm too smart. But listen, so here's the thing. If CJ Abrams were to be in the minors for like the first month of the season, and he were to get called up in May 1st, he would be getting picked up, and you'd be dropping guys who are getting drafted before him. Like, so many guys. Like, you know, like for instance, like, Whit Merrifield is going like 50 picks before him. Like, there's no, like, and I'm talking shallower leagues than 12 team or shallower. So 12 team mixed or shallower. So, but still, like, there's so many guys that, like, you know, Gavin Lux is going before CJ Abrams. Gavin Lux, we know Gavin Lux is like a 7 homer, 2 steal guy who's going to hit 260. Like, I mean, stop with the Gavin Lux already. Like, it's, I mean, I don't know. It's just like, I see CJ Abrams. He's actually, so he's another guy I also wrote a sleeper post on. So I feel like people don't think, I don't think they quite understand how fast he is. Like, he could steal 40 bags. And, you know, the Nationals have no reason to not let him run. So, you know, with steals, it's really just about opportunity and the want to steal, and I don't see why he wouldn't want to steal. I think there's a good chance that, you know, he hits at the top of the lineup or maybe second behind Lane Thomas, and, you know, it's not going to be a great lineup, but he had a 16% strikeout rate last year as a 21-year-old in the majors. I mean, he only hit 246, but that was with a low BABIP for him. He's easily a 330 plus BABIP guy. Like, he should be hitting 270 plus with like 30 plus steals. He might surprise with, you know, 5 to 7 homers. Let's say 5 homers only. 5 homers and 30 steals and 270. Come on. Like, that's like, there's nothing but value there. And he's going at like 240 overall. on ADP, and that's for NFBC. By the way, for all these guys that I say ADP for, it's all NFBC, which I will say is, you know, a smarter group in general of drafters than you're going to find at like ESPN and Yahoo. Like the regular, like people who are in like friends and family leagues that draft at ESPN, you could probably get CJ Abrams at like 300 overall. I mean, there's no one drafting Estrada or Abrams, and maybe not even Grisham at like, you know, if you go to Yahoo, you might be able to get these guys way later. I don't know their ADP in those leagues, to be honest, but I'm guessing that, you know, they're going later. So yeah, CJ Abrams is like nothing but it's value again. That is like, I can't wait to draft him in every league.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's going after like 220 Gray. He's going so late, and he's hitting at the top of a lineup. Like, just having a player that's going to play every day and hit at the top of the lineup with the potential to carry you in one, maybe even two categories if he's, you know, getting in a bunch of runs. Like, that is huge at 230. I'm kind of surprised that the prospect world has let go of CJ Abrams so fast, given just, you know, how fast he is, and the fact that, like, he's not just kind of tapping the ball. He's not Billy Hamilton. He has some authority behind his hit tool. It's not just, you know, a slap into the ground every time.
Yeah, no, completely.
All right, moving on to your next tier. Number 12 is Jorge Polanco. Last year, in 104 games, he had 16 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 54, 56, 235. You have him projected for 22 home runs, 5 stolen bases, 71, 76, 242. He had some knee issues that ended his season early. This is kind of the, like, hold your nose and hope for the best area of the draft that we're in here, Gray.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, for me, and it sounds like for you, but for ADP-wise, like, people are drafting Jorge Polanco, like, last year never happened, which is, like, crazy to me. Because, like, if we look at his numbers last year and we just assume that, you know, the dead ball – really killed his power. If he's a, you know, even being generous, if he's a 20 homer guy with 4 steals who hits 250, oh, not good. I mean, it's like so boring. Like, you're gonna, like, you may think that sounds okay if he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. You may start like rationalizing yourself, being like, oh yeah, well, he's gonna hit fourth, and, you know, he's gonna get good counting stats, and 20 homers isn't bad. You know, it's like half of what Matt Olson's gonna do, right? It's like, whoa. Like, what are you talking about, man? You're rationalizing things. You're losing yourself here. And you ain't Eminem. Let's, like, look at Jorge Polanco's, like, numbers, and you just, like, take him out across the season, and you're looking at a guy who's going to hit one homer every 12 games and steal one bag every 6 weeks. You're going to be so bored, bro. You're going to be like, you're going to get to, like, May, and you're going to be like, why did I draft Jorge Polanco? He's so boring. It's just, like, honestly, and you look at, like, his numbers – like, compared, like, you look at where he's being drafted and his numbers, and you're like, really? Like, you're looking at, like, you're looking at some, like, guys, like, who I just mentioned, guys like Vaughn Grisham, CJ Abrams, Estrada, even, like, guys who are going, they're going after him in ADP. So, obviously, I'm not drafting Jorge Polanco. I'm drafting other guys when Jorge Polanco's going. But, like, if you look at, like, just, I mean, just take, like, Estrada, and just, like, because he's, the, I guess, you know, the safest of the three, because Vaughn Grisham, you know, he has a smaller sample size, and C.J. Abrams is still somewhat of a rookie. So if you look at just, like, Estrada, and he says, he repeats his year and goes 14-20, flip that, so it's 20-14, and then you look at Jorge Polanco, and even if you take me out of the equation, the steamer projections for him are like 20 homers, 7 steals, 255 is awful. I mean, it's awful. It's just awful. I mean, it's like hard to rationalize like where he's getting drafted. Like the only thing that makes any sense is people are like, well, you know, he had a knee injury, so he's going to get back to 2021 when he hit 33 homers. He ain't getting back to 33 homers. I don't care, man. It ain't happening. His strikeouts were way up. His launch angle is insane. Like, he has a 21.7 launch angle. He hits almost 50% fly balls. My man is hitting like nothing but nonstop pop-ups to shortstop. Like, it's like, stop hitting so many fly balls, Jorge Polanco. His numbers look awful. Honestly, they don't look good. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm out on Polanco. Oh, and by the way, we already have mentioned all three of the second basemen we're actually drafting this year. We've already established we're doing a podcast of 35 players and only three of them are good.
Three of them are ones we want, you know, at least where they're going, and then we'll be excited about the other ones. You know, we may end up with the other second baseman, but it'll be like oh God, we have to fill this position. I didn't get those three guys. Now what do I do? But, you know, let's talk about some of the guys that maybe now what do I do? Brandon Lau comes in at 13. He had 8 home runs, 1 stolen base, 31, 25, 221. Obviously, he missed some time, dealt with back issues. I mean, you haven't – or sorry, let me go and give you your projections before I get into it. You haven't projected for 26 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 67, 74, 226. Nobody thought he would repeat 2021. I don't know that we thought it would be that bad, Gray. it doesn't look like you think it's going to be that bad again. But also, it's Brandon Lau.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like with Brandon Lau, the bet you're making is that his back is fine and he's going to be good for 130 games. Like, I think that's the bet you're making with Brandon Lau. I have, you know, like I said, I got Grisham, Estrada, CJ Abrams. I have guys above Lau. So I don't think I'm going to get into a position where I'm going to be actually drafting Brandon Lau. If you need a guy who could hit 25 plus homers and 225, okay. go for it. I mean, I think it's like Polanco plus 5 homers minus 25 points on batting average is, you know, how I look at Brandon Lau if you're just comparing him to the guy right in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, and the problem with Lau's, like, just general profile is he swings at the first pitch, he tries to catch that first pitch fastball, and if he doesn't catch it, it's just awful, and that's what we saw, you know, in his time last year. He swung at 45% of the first pitches he saw. When you're swinging at 45%, pitchers are going to start noticing that and just start giving you junk right off the bat. And that's a bad profile, Gray.
Right. No, it is. Exactly. And I think it's like these guys are mostly drafted by, like, you know, people who are drafting like starters early, because they're like these guys profile out as like high floor bets. And usually, like, I don't draft starters high, as everyone knows, but I think people who draft starters high, they get into a situation where they get later in the draft and they're looking at floors. They're like, well, you know, at worst, Jorge Polanco or Brandon Lau or these guys are going to give me like a certain amount on the floor. So to buoy a little bit, like, you know, I can't, like, the people who takes a starter high, they can't risk going for upside on a bat because they put so much faith into their starting pitching and they don't have the hitters up top. Like, you know, if you're missing, say, I don't know, take a name, like take Machado. Say if you're missing a Manny Machado up front, then you get to the back end and you're like, Or not even the back end, but like the middle rounds, and you're like, well, I have to take a guy like, you know, a Brandon Lau or Jorge Polanco, who's going to get me, you know, and then you start rationalizing things. You're like, Jorge Polanco is basically Manny Machado minus 20 runs. Like, what? I mean, I don't think that. I'm saying that's how people start rationalizing things. They're like, yeah, I mean, Jorge Polanco and Manny Machado, they're basically the same thing. Just 120 picks later. Like, no, that's not accurate. No, that's inaccurate. But I mean, that's what happens. And I think that's who these, I think a lot of times that like the Polancos and the Laos of the world, that's who's drafting them at these spots. It's like guys who have already drafted, like, you know, they haven't really drafted as high of upside or as solid as upside of a floor guy, like, you know, in the early rounds. So they're trying to make up for it by having like really like solid, more solid floors, I guess. Because I will say this for like a Polanco or a Lau, even though Lau's back was, you know, banged up last year, as you mentioned. So that adds a little bit of an element of unknown to them. But I will say this for like a Polanco or Lau, their floors are more than likely higher than a guy like a Vaughn Grisham. Like, I understand, like, I love Vaughn Grisham. You can rewind the podcast 25 minutes and hear about how much I love him. But his floor is lower. Like, I will give people that. Like, you know, and people don't necessarily always want a low floor. Like, a lot of times they'll be like, yeah, you took Vaughn Grisham. Great. I mean, you're saying he's going to do, you know, 15, 25, 270. But what if he does 5, 7, 220 and he gets benched? I need a Polanco who's going to give me 24 homers and a 240 average and 3 steals. I mean, it sounds boring, but some people, you know, some people need that on their team.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way some people look at it. I know, and it depends on the depth of your league. If you're playing in AL and only, NL or AL only, sometimes that playing time does matter, and you can't take as many risks as you're building out your roster. But in general, you know, we know most people play from, you know, a 10 to a 15 team league, mixed league. So most of the time you can find, you know, that balance of safety with the upside without reaching for, you know, a Jorge Polanco or a Brandon Lau, who are just going to give you likely such boring numbers across the board. And I just, again, they had the one season. They both had one big home run season. So if you're chasing that, so be it. I don't really think it's going to happen again. But just, I don't like the profile for either guy.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I don't either.
Moving on to most boring line in baseball. But by the way, he would be drafted as like a top three catcher. Ryan McMahon, he hit 20 home runs, 7 stolen bases. He hit 67, 67, 246. You have him projected for 20 home runs, 6 stolen bases, 63, 67, 252. If you didn't really see much change in that line, it's because not much changed in that line because it's Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, it's like Ryan McMahon or Will Smith, the catcher. Like, pretty much the same thing. Honestly, McMahon might have more speed. So, I mean, not to completely shatter people's dreams about everyone who's drafting a high catcher, but
it's yeah, kind we're of talking the, about Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, it's kind of the same as Ryan McMahon. Yeah, so he's another guy who doesn't actually have second base eligibility in all leagues, but he does in some. So yeah, I mean, Ryan McMahon, I feel like with like he's going at 220 ish overall on NFBC. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you're in a shallow enough league, I mean, I guess in some leagues, if you can platoon him out when he's in away games, I mean, excuse me, when he's in home games, I mean,
yeah,
no, in away games.
When he's
in away games, yeah, I had it right. Yeah, I mean, if you can only play him when he's in Coors, then, you know, more power to you.
Yeah,
it might be a good idea, but yeah, for the most part, again, he's like, he's a floor bet where you have like guys, and I know like, and not to accuse Rudy. of being a floor player. But I know, like, I could see Rudy drafting a Ryan McMahon because he'll be like, yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily, you don't know what the upside is going to be for a, you know, Vaughn Grisham. But, you know, I could see Rudy's argument being like, yeah, but Ryan McMahon will give me 22 homers, 5 steals, 250, and good and runs and RBIs from an everyday player, and that's all I need. So, I mean, I can see that argument. I ain't making it, though.
Yeah, I can get that elsewhere. I can get that later than where those guys are going, though. That's the issue for me. And to your point, I mean, not to call out Rudy when he's not here to defend himself again, like we always do. But he has Polanco 7, he has Lau 9, and he has Grissom at 21. So, like, and the projection systems across the board do not like Vaughn Grissom. Like, they do not like him at all. Like, they all top him out at, like, 13 home runs, 13 stolen bases, like, the max. And they just don't like him.
Sorry, not to interrupt, but I do wonder, too, like, if that's just them not knowing, like, the sample size is so small that they're just not knowing him. Like, they know other players because, like, if Michael Harris II would have had 41 games and did the same as Vaughn Grisham, he probably wouldn't be liked either. Like, it's just like if you're holding against Vaughn Grisham just for the fact that he just wasn't up in the majors soon enough, he's only 21 years old. like you don't hold that against, like, Corbin Carroll. Like, you're not, like, I understand Corbin Carroll's, like, number one prospect in baseball, so, you know, just like Gerard Klenick was, but, you know,
and CJ Abrams
or CJ Abrams, like, okay, that aside, but I'm saying, though, like, it's like Vaughn Grisham, you can't hold against him just for the fact that he just wasn't promoted early enough. I mean, he's only 21 years old, so yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I mean, honestly, looking at, you know, since we're picking on Rudy, why not? He doesn't listen to this podcast anyway. So if you look at his second baseman rankings, like, he's got Estrada at 10 overall, then Lau, then Brandon Rogers, who I don't have for a long time, then he's got Ketel Marte, then Jeff McNeil, then Segura, then Muncy, then Cronenworth, then Urias. Okay, I'm not going to list them all. But anyways, he's got Vaughn Grisham at 24. I listed from the 10th best to the 16th best. So I mean, that was like, you know, so some of those names I listed. So let's just take Ketel Marte, for instance. I haven't ranked him yet. We'll get to him, but I'll just say, like, he's a floor bet. Like, you expect Ketel Marte to be in the lineup most days, hit in the middle of the lineup most days, not be great for power, not be great for speed, maybe hit 270, but it's just a boring, like, 15 homer, 7 steal, 270 hitter who happens to hit third, so he's going to get good runs and RBIs. He may not even hit third. I mean, it depends on what they do with, like, McCarthy and Corbin Carroll. But anyway, that's, you know, on a tangent of just, like, when you see rankings and you see ADP, like, you're looking at a difference of possibly floors versus upside, and that is kind of contingent on what league you're in and how your team is made up.
Yeah, and then also just if you're looking at individuals and you're jumping around, like, individuals play differently. Gray and I tend to go for more upside, whereas Rudy, again, not to call him a floor guy, but he does take a little bit more in the established numbers and puts a little bit more into those than maybe Gray or I, where we may project a Vaughn Grissom out further.
In our, because, you know, I feel like I have to defend us and put down Rudy even further now. No, I'm joking. But if you look at floor bets, like, last year, I think Jonathan India was probably a floor bet, and look how that turned out. Like, floor bets don't always work. Like, Max Muncy last year was a floor bet. I told people to avoid him because he had an elbow injury, but still, he was a floor bet. Just like every year for the last 5 years or so, Giancarlo has been a floor bet. Like, you know, everyone out there knows how much I love Giancarlo Stanton, but he's a floor bet at this point. You're hoping he does, like, you know, 28 to 32 homers. It's just like, it's a floor bet. Like, floor bets are fine, but they don't necessarily, they're not necessarily safer. They just appear safer.
Yeah. Yeah. We really don't know until we get into it. And the problem with a floor bet is usually it's because their skills then aren't that loud, which means that if something slips, they really don't have anything to fall back on either. That's part of the problem with the floor bets. But, you know,
yeah, like that's great. That's actually a great point. Yes, exactly.
Like, if they're not that fast and then they then lose power, you're getting absolutely jacked from them. Whereas at least the guy who's fast and young can steal you some bases and provide value. And to your point about, like, the Grissom Harris thing at high A in Atlanta, so the same high A, last year in 74 games, Vaughn went 11-20-3-12. In 2021, when Michael Harris was at high A, he was there for 26 more games, so 101 games. He had 7 home runs, 27 stolen bases, and .294. So Grissom basically did almost the same thing, maybe a little, like, a better pace almost, except for maybe the power, in less games. So it is partially like what we saw. I love Michael Harris. I have no problem taking him where he's going, but this is kind of the point that we both feel like Grissom should be going higher despite the projected low batting spot.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we're doing the second base rankings, a.k.a. Vaughn Grissom.
Give us all the Vaughn Grissom.
We need a third host to be like, okay, we should move on, guys.
All right, speaking of, let's move on to number 15, Josh Rojas. Last season, he had 9 home runs, 23 stolen bases, 66, 56, 269. You have him projected for 9 home runs, 18 stolen bases, 61, 51, 261. I think the concern here is kind of what we just got done talking about with our boy Vaughn Grissom. Just to tie everything back to him. It's the spot in the lineup. I just don't know. Last year, you know, Arizona lost everybody, and so he just kind of got shoved at the top of the lineup. I don't know that he keeps his spot this year.
Yeah, I know. I'm more concerned about what goes on with, like, Corbin Carroll and whether he plays against everyone. Every time I look at the Diamondbacks lineup, that's the first thing I think of. But with Josh Rojas, no, I agree. I don't mind Josh Rojas really for like if he were going a little bit later. I don't really see myself drafting him. Like, I think, you know, like I've said in the past, like, he's a lefty, so he won't face lefties. Another question mark with Corbin Carroll, by the way. But yeah, I don't think he's going to face lefties. But as I've said in the past, you probably don't want lefties facing lefties. They're not usually good versus lefties. So the fact that he doesn't face them isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it is going to, you know, it'll affect some of his counting stats. It'll probably take off like 15 to 20 runs plus RBI. So, yeah, I mean, I don't mind Rojas. I kind of don't think I'm going to be drafting him, though, to be honest.
Yeah, it just feels like you're just chasing speed if you're going after Rojas. And, I mean, he's not even that fast. So if he drops in the order, does Arizona then ask him to run as much? I don't know, because it is about, you know, the teams and where they what they want you to do wherever you're hitting. So as much as there's not a statistical correlation to batting vision and blah, 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 it does matter in managers' minds. So
yeah, no, completely. And Diamondbacks are actually – they're like sneakily – a very interesting lineup to be watching. And I don't put really much weight in spring training lineups because, you know, like Shohei Ohtani will bat leadoff in right. the spring training just to like get him at bats or something. Like it doesn't really correlate. Like spring training at bats don't really mean anything, but I do think the Diamondbacks lineup can go a lot of ways. Like people are assuming that like Corbin Carroll is going to hit leadoff, and then Kettle Marte, then Jake McCarthy, then Christian Walker, then Josh Rojas. that'll be the top five. I don't know if that's going to be the case. They have Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Evan Longoria. I mean, we know Longoria's on the you know, he's on the tail end of his career. We know he's not going to be great, but he's also the kind of bat that, you know, randomly could hit fourth for no reason and just like and push Walker up, and McCarthy maybe goes up, Marte comes way down, Corbin Carroll maybe comes down. Like, I don't know. I'm interested in seeing how the Diamondbacks lineup plays out. I don't think it's going to necessarily be how I just read it off of Roster Resource, if we're being totally honest.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're just looking at specifically like the spots where he can move up to, like if we're looking at McCarthy, lefty, Rojas, McCarthy, like they basically had the exact same line last year. McCarthy had a little bit better average, which, you know, that can be a little bit of BABIP induced, but Rojas actually takes more walks, strikes out less. So to some extent, it's better to get him more at bats because he's a more patient hitter. So there's also the potential maybe he moves up to one if Carroll proves that he is every bit the stud that we thought he was, and Carroll moves down to three, bumps McCarthy down to five. Like, there's all sorts of ways that this lineup can kind of configure together depending on what Carroll does, what Marte looks like coming back, what McCarthy does, what Rojas does. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces here. And like you said, like, Longoria can magically just pop into the 3-4 spot because they're like, oh, he's a veteran presence. He'll take pitches. That's what we need at the top of the lineup right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, I'm not saying I would put Longoria at the top of the lineup, but I've seen crazier things happen from, like, major league managers. So, yeah, I wouldn't put it past them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, moving on to the next tier. Number 16 is Max Muncy. Last season, he hit 21 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 69-69. Nice. And 196. this year, you have him projected for 26 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 62-71, and 219. And I had here on the notes that he's the poster boy for the dead ball. But as you mentioned the first time around that we recorded this second base podcast, it does kind of coincide with the injury as well. So I don't want to put the whole dead ball thing on him, but second base is another position that has been just destroyed by the dead ball.
Yeah, no, it has. And Muncy specifically, like, he's going right after Gleyber Torres, which I just find to be so funny.
Why? I mean,
that's just, like, that's some serious galaxy braining shit right there, man. Like, you got to really, like, figure that out. Like, you got to, like, somehow figure it out in your head that Max Muncy is going to bounce back in such a big way. Like, such a huge, like, not only will he not hit 200, which is very possible, but he's going to bounce back with like 35 homers. He's going to have crazy runs in RBIs. He's going to stay healthy all year. Like, you got to really galaxy brain Max Muncy to be drafting him right after Gleyber Torres. Like, that's crazy. Like, it's really crazy. Like, honestly, anyone who drafts Max Muncy that high, I feel like their friend should have an intervention with that person. Be like, yo, bro, like, what's going on, man?
Did you just like the name? What's going on? Did double M's get you?
Did you hit your head? yeah, so anyway, I'm not drafting Max Muncy.
All right, moving on to the next guy then. Maybe you'll draft some of him. Number 17, Jonathan India. Last year was a disappointing season for everybody at Razzball for Jonathan India. 10 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 48-41, 249 in 103 games. You have him projected for 20 home runs, 9 stolen bases, 83-65, 256. I mean, he had everything below, like, his hip injured last season. Underlying numbers were bad, but this is another one you just kind of have to look past it, or was it who Jonathan India is?
Yeah, well, I think with Jonathan India, the one thing that I really think he does have going for him is that park is so good. Like, that's like the new Coors. So maybe his power builds a little bit on his rookie year and he ends up with like 25 homers and he's got, you know, 7 to 10 steal speed, and he's always been a good hit tool guy. Like, he's, you know, he makes good contact. He should probably hit 270. So, I mean, I could see a India bounce back. And, you know, in for people who are Patreon subscribers, I actually had India higher originally, and then I dropped them late in the process. Like, I put out my rankings, like, December 1st, and then I tweak for about 6 weeks. But, yeah, I mean, I think Jonathan India is probably fine if he's healthy. I just don't know if he's healthy 100%, so I got a little bit of cold feet on him. I don't mind him. Just like the reason why I drafted him last year is because I really like his he seems like he could be a star. I worry a little bit about his health and maybe also about his desire. I don't know. It was like, it felt like I was getting weird vibes from him all last year. That was like, you know, it kind of turned me off a little bit. So I'm probably out on him where I have him ranked, but I have him ranked around his ADP. So I might draft him in a league or two to get back in on it, but I'm not 100% sold. He's 100% fine, you know?
Yeah, and I think the problem that you're going to run into, and I think maybe I run into as well, is there's guys we've already talked about going after him in a lot of circumstances. So it's like, oh, India went off the board. Well, I have three guys that I still have higher than him anyways. So I don't feel that bad about missing out on him, even though I do believe in like the true talent of him. I think he's a good hitter. I think he's a very solid, like if he was 100% healthy and what we kind of projected last year, like you're looking at like a 25 home run, I'd say 7 to 10 steal, maybe 15 on the high end, like 270, 280 hitter if he just continued to build off of what he had been doing. And then last year happened. So I still think there's potential for upside here, but may just be priced out because of the guys we like after him.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Have we mentioned Vaughn Grisham?
Can we talk about Vaughn Grisham? All right, moving on to your next tier here, Gray. We've talked about most of these guys, so I'm just going to kind of list them, and we'll talk about the one guy we haven't quite covered yet. Number 18 is Brandon Drury. We talked about him during first base. Luis Arias, same thing, first base. Jeff McNeil comes in at 20. We'll get back to him. Jake Cronenworth comes in at 21, and Brendan Donovan comes in at 22, all during the first base. So if you want to hear about them, you can go listen to that two-hour podcast.
Has a great deal on chicken.
But here at Jeff McNeil at 20, last season he had 9 home runs, 4 stolen bases, 73, 62, 326. You have him projected for 10 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 89, 57, 306. I mean, he is the epitome of second base.
Yeah, I mean, he's like probably like he's honestly he's draftable. If your team needs batting average, like if you have a team that you've drafted a bunch of anchors at batting average and you feel like you need a boost in batting average, I could see drafting Jeff McNeil at like 170 overall, like where his ADP is. But I also, if you don't need batting average, then more than likely he's undraftable until like 300 overall. Like there's no reason to draft him unless you need batting average. So, I mean, I could see drafting him if your team needs it, but more than likely, I'm not going to be drafting them.
Yeah, there's a few guys that you can definitely get. Like they're batting average guys, and it just depends on which one falls the furthest. Which one I'm going to take to be my like sub in guy, basically. When I feel like my average is maybe starting to slip.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So moving on to your next tier here, which is 23, Bryson Stott. Last year, he had 10 home runs, 12 stolen bases, 58, 49. He hit 234. You have him projected for 15 home runs, 14 stolen bases, 64, 70, 276. It seems like you like the average a little bit more. It seems like you're kind of in on Bryson Stott a little bit more, at least, than maybe ADP and projections would say.
I think I'm probably around ADP for him. I think at this point, like this tier specifically is like the tail end of like 12 team mixed leagues specifically, and like you're at like, and for 15 team I could see these guys being MIs or even maybe a utility if you drafted a lot of hitters, but probably MI. Bryson Stott to me feels like somewhat of a floor bat with like, because I don't see his average, I mean not his average, his homers or steals being really like a huge, I don't see the huge upside for either of them, but I do think he could probably, like 15-15 isn't bad. I mean, it's just like when you're going through it during the season, it becomes real boring when a guy hits like one homer and steals one bag like every 15 games. Like that gets boring real fast. But, you know, on a deeper league team, on like a, you know, a 15 team mixed league or deeper, definitely NL only. Like there's places for Bryson Stott, not necessarily in a shallower league though.
Yeah, and he did miss some time last year. So the numbers that we said he put up last year is including that he did miss some time. So basically missed the first 2 months of the season. So there is a little bit of upside. 15-15 is certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I don't know if I necessarily see 276, but we've had so much, or there's so little that he's done in the majors. That was his rookie season last year. So I'm also willing to give him, you know, room for some growth after seeing 127 games up in the majors. Moving on to number 24 is Christopher Morel. Last season, he had 16 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 55, 47, 235. You have projected for 17 home runs, 15 stolen bases, 61, 67, 224. I'm a little worried about Christopher Morel as a Cubs fan.
Yeah, I mean, I can see your worry. I see your worry, and I raise you. Second base is a really bad position, so maybe take a flyer.
And yeah, the Cubs aren't good. Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the Cubs aren't good could potentially play in his favor because it might get him at bats. Whereas on another team, they may be like, hey, who's the guy hitting 220? Let's get him out of the order. I do worry that, like, you know, his skills are – like, I think he's got good speed. So I think he could steal some bags if he can get on base. Like, I do worry that, like, even last year he had a 320 BABIP and only hit 235. Like, I mean, he probably – like, that's probably a neutral BABIP for him because he does have speed, like I said, but – a 235 neutral average isn't good. It's not great. So, I mean, I do worry that, like, if Christopher Morel is, like, you know, if he gets to, like, I don't know, May hitting 200 or under, they may find a way to get him out of the lineup, and then he's just like, you know, then he's droppable in a lot of in most leagues. So I do worry that there is like I think his upside is interesting, like because he does have some speed and some power, but his downside is basically like droppable, and you don't want him on your team anymore by May 1st.
Yeah, I mean, I think the speed is legit. He could steal probably. I mean, he could be 25 stolen base guy if he just really wanted to, and the Cubs just let him run every time he got on base, and if he could get on base, which, again, I think is maybe the biggest issue. But, yeah, I mean, the tools are there. He can hit the ball hard. He has great speed. I mean, phenomenal speed. So the tools are all there. It's just kind of a poor man's Rougned Odor situation where it's kind of the reverse where Odor had more power, maybe a little less speed. Morel could maybe steal 25-30 bases, but it's also likely kind of come with a really bad approach.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, moving on here is Luis Urias coming in at number 25 for you. Last year, he had 16 home runs. He had a stolen base, 54, 47, 239. You have projected for 20 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 241. Luis Arias is kind of one of those I feel like people are either completely out on and want nothing to do with, or, you know, there, other people are looking at him as kind of a decent value where he's going.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I was actually, I wrote a sleeper post for him last year, and I was all in. And yeah, I've cooled on that pretty dramatically. I just don't know. Like, I think the power is real, and I don't think he's got any speed. I think he could struggle to hit 235. Like, I worry that he could be, like, he might be a 25 homer 240 hitter, which isn't bad. I mean, don't get me wrong, I would take that, especially where he's going in drafts. But I do worry that he might be more of like a 17 to 19 homers 230, and that's just like, I mean, it's pretty much unusable. So his floor is real not good. It's a real and not good. But yeah, his upside isn't really that great. But I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for him right now that's working in his favor is the 3-position eligibility at second, third, and shortstop. So that's really what you're looking at for him. That's going to kind of balance the reason that he's on your roster. But I do think there's upside for, you know, low 20s home runs, a handful of stolen bases, and he's going to hit, I mean, one would think he's going to hit no worse than 6 or 7, because the lineup doesn't really have anything at the bottom right now. So there's no reason he couldn't kind of sit there and hit at the 6th, 7th spot.
Right. Yeah, no, agreed.
Yeah. Very boring, though. There's not a whole lot to be looking for there. I was trying to paint as rosy a picture as possible. And that still sounded really not very interesting. Moving on to the next tier here is Gene Segura at 26. You have him projected for 12 home runs, 15 stolen bases, 82, 54, 279. So just slightly better than what he did last year. I mean, Gene Segura is another he's a playing time guy. He's going to show up higher in Rudy's rankings as we just continue to talk about Rudy behind his back. But, I mean, a 33-year-old. I already didn't like Jose Altuve. And now we're talking about Gene Segura, who, you know, 10-13, 277 last season isn't overly exciting. Even though it was in under 100 games, there's still no guarantee that he's a full-time playing time guy this year.
Yeah, no, exactly. I do wonder if, like, you know, he's kind of the guy who is like a deep league guy almost exclusively. I do wonder, like, if you're like, he's going at 80, an ADP of like 240, and that's for deep leagues. You know, it's majority is 15 team leagues, I believe. So in a 15 team league at 240, I get it. You're making a play for runs and RBIs, potentially average as well. So, I mean, I can see it. But in a shallow league, if you're taking Segura, then just quit your league right after your draft, man. like, there's no point. Like, what are you doing? Like, there's nothing. Like, in a shallow league, if you're going for, like, a floor play, you're drafting completely incorrectly. Sorry. I'm sorry. But, like in a 12-team league, Gene Segura should never be drafted.
No, he really shouldn't be. I mean, maybe he maintains the lineup spot more for the Marlins than he did last year, and maybe he gets you 10 to 15 stolen bases. But like you said, it's so boring. It's all floor. So know your leagues. Know where that's, you know, nowhere boring 125 games matters. And if that matters in your league, congratulations. You can go get Gene Segura. next up at 27 is Ketel Marte. Last year he had 12 home runs, 5 stolen bases, 68, 52, 240 in 137 games. You have him projected for 13 home runs, 5 stolen bases, 68, 59, 258. I mean, the 32 home runs in 2019 just seems like it came out of nowhere at this point.
Yeah.
Just nowhere.
I mean, that is just, I mean, it screams bouncy ball, you know? It's like, if nothing else, like, if you were to just, like, you have one question for Rob Manfred, it's like, well, how do you explain Ketel Marte, bro? Like, Ketel Marte is so, like, he is the poster boy for bouncy ball versus dead ball. I mean, it's like, Ketel Marte is so clearly a 12 to 15 homer guy. And, you know, in 2019, he became like Kyle Schwarber. It's like, oh, well, that's interesting. How'd that happen? I wonder. I question whether or not Ketel Marte has now become a power hitter. No, he's not a power hitter. It's the ball, man. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I'm not drafting Ketel Marte. I don't. But I think some people actually are buying the bounce back on Ketel Marte, which is interesting to me because I don't know what they're expecting to bounce back. I don't know. I mean, he's clearly. Like, if you look at Ketel Marte, he's clearly not a power hitter. I mean, you could just look at him and be like, yeah, I don't even know how that guy hit more than 20 homers ever. And is everything, and he's got no real speed. He kind of like, I mean, the Diamondbacks have been, I mean, not all the time, not regularly, but they platoon him out sometimes. Like, he's not, like, he was only in 137 games last year. Yeah, I mean, maybe he lost, like, maybe he had an IL stint or something that I'm not remembering. But still, he's like, I mean, he's so clearly a 12 to 15 homer 270 hitter, which is so boring. Oh, my God. It's like, oh, my God, that is the worst. Like, that, I mean, that he's getting drafted in front of a guy like Bryson Stott, it's just like, seriously, man, whoever's drafting Ketel Marte before Bryson Stott, it's like, seriously, just like, just admit to yourself, vanilla is your favorite ice cream flavor, and and you buy airplane insurance when you get every flight you get on. Like, it's like, come on, man, like, live a little bit, like, please.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can think of is he should be at the top of the order, so he should get you runs. And he's hit for a high average before in bouncy ball seasons, but again, I think you're closer on, you know, your projected 258. That's somewhere between where you had and Rudy have him, which is 258 and 268 seems a lot closer to what to expect than a 330 guy like he was in that one magical season. Moving on to 28, which is Whit Merrifield. Last year, he had 11 home runs, 16 stolen bases, 70, 58, 250. You have him projected for 9 home runs, 15 stolen bases, 51, 57, 254. And, I mean, it's the last year of his contract, so there's also some possibility of, you know, platooning or trade or whatever else with Whit Merrifield. But after I've already dragged him, what do you got on Whit Merrifield?
Yeah, I mean, he's also extremely boring, and I do agree that at some point in like July moving towards August, I wouldn't be surprised if Whit Merrifield is either platooned or if the Blue Jays are serious contenders, if they go out and they get someone and Merrifield becomes platooned. Like, he's just not really an everyday guy anymore. I wouldn't be shocked if Whit Merrifield is a bench/platoon guy for the Blue Jays by, like, August 1st. Now, in most leagues, that probably won't matter because you'll be able to replace Whit Merrifield. But in the leagues where you can replace him readily, you shouldn't be drafting him anyway. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but you screwed up.
Yeah, I don't really know about that I'm going to be investing a lot in any Whit Merrifield shares. But, you know, I guess there's some room for it in AL only if you're chasing kind of the dual eligibility and, you know, a little bit of speed. He's always going to provide a little bit of speed, even though he's lost a little bit of his speed. I still think he's just smart enough that he's going to give you some stolen bases. But that's pretty much all I would be counting on at that point. Gray, we are getting a little bit long here. Your next tier is equally boring as the guys that we've talked about so far. There might be one or two interesting names. Anybody that you want to kind of highlight in this next tier?
You know, sometimes I'll listen to other podcasts, and not sports related podcasts, but like, you know, other podcasts. Anyway, sometimes I'll listen to them and they'll have like a mark of like where I can fast forward to. You should just like have like Vaughn Grisham like mark
over and over again.
Jump to Vaughn Grisham and then stop listening. Okay, so, you know, I think there's like there could be something to like, I mean, again, this, you have to be in super deep leagues, but like if you're looking at like a deep league play, like a Vidal Brujan is kind of interesting. Like it wasn't that long ago that he was like the next big thing and everyone thought he was going to like, you know, steal 50 bags and hit 15 to 20 homers and like have good bat control. And everyone loved Vidal Brujan. So, I mean, and he's still very young. I question whether or not the Rays are going to play him every day just because they don't play anyone every day. But, I mean, if you're in a super deep league and Vidal Brujan is sitting there at, like, right now his ADP is over 600 overall. So if even at, like, 400 overall, Vidal Brujan is worth a flyer, you know? Like, it's like Vidal Brujan or Nick Gordon. I mean, I would take the flyer on Vidal Brujan, you know, or it's like Vidal Brujan or like Isaac Paredes. Like, yeah, I mean, take the flyer. I don't know. I mean, Paredes actually might not be terrible, but that's only because he's going to play every day. One other guy, I also really liked Luis Garcia, the Nationals, Luis Garcia. I really liked him when he first came up. He really looked terrible last year, so I don't know. I don't know how much I like him now, but if he starts hitting in April, I'm going to be all about Luis Garcia. Like, he's going to be a guy who I'm going to be like, grab him now. He's good. It's just I wasn't sure if he was going to be good back in like December, November when I wrote up my rankings, but he's good now. Grab him. Like, I can see Luis Garcia being someone who I'm really excited about as like a hot potato. So yeah, I would grab, you know, I'm talking about very late in drafts, but I would look at like a Luis Garcia or Vidal Brujan super late. If, you know, and maybe like Rodolfo Castro, I don't know where he's going to, I don't know what to expect from him really, but maybe he could be something.
Yeah. I mean, he could be something. I do like the Brujan call just cause he could be a difference maker in stolen bases, given plate appearances and if he can just figure out a way to get on base. Nolan Gorman is a guy we didn't necessarily mention. He came in at 30 for you. I mean, he's only 22. They brought him up early, and he's adjusted at every level. So I'm not willing to just completely write him off either. I'm willing to give him another shot. And then, you know, a lot of the other guys are just kind of boring guys like Gavin Lux and Brendan Rodgers and Nick Gordon. Nick Gordon had a few, you know, decent stretches last year, but That's pretty much it, and there's a whole lot of boring here. I will say, I think we should talk about Trevor Story real quick, and just kind of whether you think he's worth even, you know, rostering. I know a lot of people will roster guys because they have the space to put them or the IL spot, thinking they're going to come back and make a difference. I mean, are we even looking at Trevor Story as a difference maker anymore?
No. I liked him as a bounce back before the injury, but the fact that he waited until January to get his elbow fixed, like, oh, get out of here, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm out on Trevor Story now.
Yeah, I am too. I didn't like him really last year. I'm just going to continue that and just say that I'm probably never going to draft Trevor Story again, because his name is just going to carry probably more value than I'm willing to take at this point. So just wanted to bring that up before we get out of here. Gray, as always, if you have questions and you're listening, you can find us out on Twitter. I am, of course, at RazBdon, and Gray runs the at RazBall account. You can find us on youtube.com/RazBallFantasy if you want to watch us talk back and forth here. And if not, you know, that's fine too. You can always listen to us where you get your podcast. Rate, review, subscribe, and wherever you're listening to it. And we'll be back next week with another set of podcast rankings. See you, Greg.
All right. All right, late.